I'm loving all these stories. There's such great value and lessons in them. And I'm still really pumped because we've got even more great stories to share. The next one we're going to travel to, and once again, excuse me if I butcher the name here, Samburu Reserve in Kenya.
That's correct. Completely spot on.
Fantastic. And not only are we going to travel there, we're going to talk about a bull elephant and positive punishment. Let's dive in.
Well, in Samburu Reserve, I mean, this is one of the great things about seeing animals in the wild, and I just utterly encourage all of us to take an ethological approach to looking at animal behavior. There is so much of the artificial, there is so much of the constructed in the interactions we have with animals in our homes, in our workplaces. The value, the importance of actually watching animals in the environment around them is just such an essential thing. Now, this one did actually involve interaction from this bull elephant with our vehicle. We were traveling along this creek line, and we noticed an impressive animal with amazing ivory just foraging along this creek line. And we stopped to take photographs of him, and we noticed, of course, that he was oozing a lot of temporal fluid. He was in fairly advanced muths, so we were already a little bit on the alert that this animal could be behaving in a way that made him a little more dangerous, a bit more hazardous than usual. So there we were, clicking away, just entranced on this superb African morning. And for those of us who've traveled in Africa will know what I'm talking about, that when you're in an African morning, you really do feel like it is the first day of creation, if you like, if I can take some artistic license there. Beautiful conditions. This elephant, more quickly than we really could give the animal credit for, then left the creek bed and pretty much moved towards us with real deliberation. And before we knew it, he'd smashed through a fairly substantial tree and was right on the back of the vehicle. And I've never experienced an emotional sequence for myself quite like it, of having been just in this state of reverie admiring this animal, and then having basically my insides just liquefy with fear and being in this suspended state of noticing this imminent danger coming toward me in the shape of this huge gray mess with these two beady, very intent eyes beginning to make these extraordinary noises with his tongue trucked up and his ears flaring. And our driver did a very interesting thing at the moment. He actually spun his wheels in the dust and set up this huge cloud of dust onto this bull elephant. And this made absolutely zero impact, with a result that then our driver, Sammy, floored it and basically dumped the vehicle forward away from this bull, who followed us for a bit, then sort of diverted off and started to feed. But, you know, the moment we stopped, he oriented back to us and came forward again. So we just got out of there. And it was only later that Sammy, a seasoned safari driver, admitted that that was one of the most frightening bull elephants that he'd ever come across, and that he was going to be sharing news about that animal with all of his fellow drivers in the district. So what did we learn from that? Basically that behavior is situationally specific, that this animal in this state was not perturbed in any way whatsoever by that sardine can full of human animals flaring a paltry plume of dust up at him. And that some animals in some circumstances can become hardened to such stimuli, so much so that it becomes a prompt to actually increase the forward movement. And we also saw then the practice later that Sammy put in place of doing the same thing to younger elephants when they would approach the back of the vehicle. And indeed, these younger elephants would scat. They would move away from that. And he explained to us that the drivers have an agreement that they do this because they don't want to train elephants, young bulls, to follow vehicles or to chase them by moving away from them. They actually do want to put some kind of positive punishment on that event in the present moment And to a degree, it works, but not necessarily for a bull elephant in must. So it pays us all to remember that when it comes to behavior, not all situations are created equal, and that behavior changes with context, and so should we. And for all of us to remember that when you're dealing with wild animals, particularly creatures like elephants, you must remember how utterly vulnerable and frail you are. You might have a dramatic and impressive prefrontal cortex, but really, in the face of an elephant with an agenda, it could end up being your last little bit of arrogance.
Beautiful. Just apologize for my distractions. I've got terrible weather here and the PB hasn't been out for 2 days. So I'm just managing as I'm listening.
Sure, no worries.
So she's in the room with me now because she was interacting with the cats undesirably, so she's been dumped in here for the time being. And she has toys spread from arsehole to breakfast time on the floor, so she's keeping herself busy. All right, great story, and I look forward to listening back to that one because I'm semi-distracted. Okay. Hey, great story, and thanks for sharing that. Oh, no, I don't like that. Hang on. So we're going to move on now, and we've kind of touched on observing animals in the wild, but you had a few more stories that you wanted to share. I think the lorikeet one and...
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Cool. So let me just start. I was going to pause for 15 seconds. I find that helps when I'm distracted and frazzled.
Sure. It's a good policy.
Hey, cool. Thanks so much for sharing that story, Nick. And I want to build upon this now because I know it's something you're deeply passionate about. And I really want to spend way, way more time in the future learning about applied behavior analysis from watching wild animals. I think that's just such a great concept. Can you expand on this even more, Nick, and share your thoughts and feelings on this subject and maybe some more experiences?
Yeah, I'd love to. You know, we think that Skinner and Pavlov did a lot of the fundamental groundwork for us about how behavior works in controlled lab-style environments. But we also remember that groundbreakers like Nico Tinbergen and Konrad Lorenz and Carl von Frisch were the first ethologists who indeed shared a Nobel Prize for their work in ethology. Von Frisch famously with the wiggle dance of bees. And dear to my heart is, of course, the work of Tinbergen, who worked with gulls and Lorenz, who also observed geese. So they were really the founding fathers of ethology, watching behavior in the field and learning about the way animals learn through interface with the environment. I think it's really important for me to passionately stand by this really important area that we need to pay attention to. And all of us work in these environments where we get to have things very much our own way. We decide when the training session is going to be. We bring what we need to it. It's a very constructed experience. And there's a real danger in that we can grow a perception that training is centralized around that human animal, that human figure. But really what the animal is doing is using mechanisms that have been honed over eons. And I love Susan Friedman's teaching in her Living and Learning with Animals course about the fact that an animal approaches you from its evolutionary heritage, its individual history as a learner, and indeed what's going on in the present moment. But I think its evolutionary heritage is an important thing to know about. And just watching any animal have interface with the environment is so amazing. Once again in Samburu, we were in the safari vehicle and came across this cheetah that was lounging in the grass under the shade of a shrub. And occasionally this cheetah would sit up, look around the environment. It was on a slope just in the foothills and the plains were stretching out before it. And then it would just languidly flop down again into the grass. A number of other vehicles drove past this cat, but our driver just stayed with it and encouraged us to enjoy it and just take photos of this animal. And after a bit, what we noticed was that some white-collared ravens and some hooded vultures flew in to the area and landed in the trees above this cheetah. It was absolutely amazing. I thought, what's going on here? Then this cheetah finally, after about 45 minutes worth of watching it, came forward, walked along the side of the safari van, and then at the end of it, walked down onto the plains. Now, we drove off on the road that we were on, and that swung around in an arc, kind of parallel to the forward movement the cheetah had taken. And then, suddenly, this cheetah slunk down into stalking mode, followed by this explosive rush of cheetah action. And over the course of about 30 meters, covered the distance in next to no time. You know, when you see cheetah running in documentaries, it's tabbed with, it's slowed down so you can appreciate the action. Nothing could have prepared me in that moment for how fast that animal could move. And it flushed a young Grant's gazelle from the grass and killed it immediately, and ended up by that same piece of road, which swung in this convenient arc so that we could be right by it as it killed this gazelle fawn. So as it turned out, what had been happening was that the cheetah had been watching Grant's gazelles out on the plain, had noticed a female put its youngster down in the grass, probably after having had a feed, to go off to do some more grazing. I think that those birds were watching this behavior, and of course they had a bird's eye view of the entire picture. And I think that animals learn how to watch each other, guided by the question, what's in it for me? And that white-collared raven, those hooded vultures, I think read accurately the scenario that was playing out below them. And then, of course, we're in the prime position to take advantage of spoils to monitor that cheetah with that carcass so that they could therefore fly down and be positively reinforced for their vigilance. So moments like that in the field where there's layers of interaction are just extraordinary, an amazing experience. But then taking it back home here to Australia and noticing one day while I was having a coffee in a cafe in the rocks when I lived in Sydney, a pair of rainbow lorikeets flew into one of the trees in this courtyard and right in front of me just flew down onto the table, tottered forward, bold as, like parrot movement on the ground is always so endearing. And lorikeets add all these really cool little hops, skips and jumps to it as well. They truly are the clowns of the parrot set. And this lorikeet comes up to the sugar pot, takes a sachet of sugar, flies up into the tree with it, and then rips off the top and starts tilting the sachet forward and then licking out the sugar with its tongue. Now, this was pretty nifty, but even more amazing was the fact that it had its mate with it. And what it would do when it would get a gobful of sugar for itself is that it would then hand the sachet over to its mate, who would also help itself to a little sweet hit. So just watching the way animals say yes in the environment and taking advantage of whatever opportunities exist, I think is a really, really important thing. We see here, you know, a cheetah perhaps using our vehicle as a barrier to make sure it could move down along it to not be detected. We see the lorikeet grabbing that sachet. Those are all contexts where there was some kind of human presence, some aspect of us in the environment that's used. But no actual direct training from us was needed to observe amazing things about applied behavior analysis, about the ABCs of learning in that moment. And I think what it really does is it serves to fully emphasize the subtle interplay of everything that's operating in an animal's environment to get learning to happen meaningfully, to improve skill, to change behavior due to experience, as Paul Chance so beautifully and simply says in Learning and Behavior. And I think those are two of my favorite examples of that. And the last one is driving on a very open country track towards a town called Hamley Bridge in South Australia some years ago and coming across the figure of a black falcon that had just killed a galah in the center of the road. And I thought, well, there's no way I'm going to leave that galah in the center of the road for that beauty to be knocked by a car. So I got out of the vehicle and I just went around the front of the vehicle, and this falcon just took off the bird, went and landed on a fence post and just watched. And this is the thing, animals watch us. We are just part of the potential for opportunity in the environment. I just picked up the galah and I moved it into the verge of the road and threw it right into the grass so that this bird could feed right away from the road, and then walked away. And as I did so, the bird just flew down onto that galah. So there was just that beautiful dance between human animal and bird in that relationship at that moment. Just emphasizing observation, bird seeing me initially as a stimuli that might drive it away from the galah, but then watching to see what would happen, staying on the fence post. Obviously, he'd worked hard for that prize, and there was a lot of valuable food in that galah carcass. So remaining attached to that, being concerned about me, but the coolness with which this bird operated, and then flew gently back down onto this galah after I left. You know, valuable lessons like that every turn, if we care to open our eyes and observe just sparrows and pigeons on your city street, lorikeets in your street trees, kangaroos in a back paddock, wherever it's happening. Behavior is the greatest show on earth that's got lessons to teach, if only we care just to watch in the field all the things we need to know to be successful trainers in our homes and in our facilities.
Beautiful. And I'm so glad that we brought that up today, Nick, because we haven't really talked about that on the podcast before, and you articulated fantastically for us today. So thanks for that. And at the same time, sadly, we're nearly at the end. But before we get there, I just want to ask one more question that I ask all guests on this show, and it's a very important one, and I can't wait to hear your thoughts and feelings on it. Could you please tell everyone out there listening, what would you like to see happen in the next 5 to 10 years with positive reinforcement animal training, both internationally and in our region, in Australasian region?
I'd like to see a willingness for people in organizations to support their animal trainers to make applied behavior analysis and direct training interactions a totally mandatory and accepted and encouraged part of the day. Because sometimes I see, along with enrichment, that these sorts of more formal behavior interactions are regarded as an added extra if you can get to it in your day, secondary to all of those welfare-bound mores around husbandry. Now, one of the most important things to remember about welfare is that when we talk about the five freedoms and those very worthy models, we are still bound by human perception about the way animals perceive their world. And that's fine. But we have to remember, as soon as we express something about freedom, we're moving very much into human philosophy. The way we perceive freedom is very much built into the way we think about it as we apply it to the animals with which we live and the animals that we care for. So if we're talking about the five freedoms from a welfare basis, then I think that we need to encourage ourselves and everybody we work with to give animals the freedom to indicate to us, to demonstrate what it is they're interested in. How is their seeking system rolling in that moment? And are we really tuning into this phrase, this idea that I've been talking about for some years, the choice voice? Are we really listening and tuning in to what animals are telling us? I think we also need to give greater emphasis to reptiles and fish and insects and their learning, not just birds and mammals. Very often get the lion's share of our attention. I think greater emphasis generally on positive reinforcement in our training programs. We definitely want governing body interest in positive reinforcement-based training. And we also need to remember that charity begins at home in your own species. It's very easy, once we get some success training animals, to get a bit of ego on us. And the ego is always that bogey who's willing to be that bully that trips us up as we come around the corner and then laugh at us. Because ego is just like that. It's not actually interested in our success. It's just interested in whatever we can get as a short grab in the present moment. So we have to remember that if we're going to be positive reinforcement trainers, that we start first and foremost with each other. And remember too that the avoidance of constructs and labels is really important. We need to develop ways to talk meaningfully about behavior as action in the present moment and to gently guide each other away from constructs. With my crew at Zoos SA, one of the best things for me that shows me a gratifying level of success is the fact that my guys constantly self-correct on the label front. Now, they'll say, now I'm going to label this and then I'm going to describe it. And I love that about them. But I also think that we need to look at constantly, what is the gap between stimulus and response in the way that we work with each other and the way we perceive behavior? And to remember that we are lifelong learners, that being behaviors is our heritage as organisms, that all of us have not just the inborn right to explore this area, but indeed an obligation to ourselves, our success, and our relationships with each other to be prepared to have a go, to get in there, to experiment, and to use positive reinforcement to get that behavior seeking, to keep our seekers seeking in the target direction. So these are the kinds of things that I'd like to see more and more of, just awareness at every angle of the value of positive reinforcement and what it can bring for getting not only really great learning performance, but ultimately the best, most enriched welfare outcomes for animals that we interact with.
Thank you. Got to run away to worry about that. Hey, Nick, thank you so much for that answer. And I was sitting here, as I so often do in this podcast, just nodding my head. And what I absolutely love about asking that question to so many different people is the same thought process being articulated in such personal ways from individuals. So it's so beautiful to have your great mind articulate such beautiful ideas for the audience of this podcast. Thank you very much. Nick, that was so much fun. And it's great to have done this podcast episode together. I know it's something that we've been discussing for a while. So very excited to have finished recording it. And I'm very excited about editing it over the coming days as well. Before I wrap up, Nick, I just wanted to express my gratitude for taking time out of your day to be on the show today. And a massive thank you from everyone listening as well.
Thank you so much. And for everybody out there, just remember that whatever your challenge is, you are not alone, that we have Ryan and we have so many other people who are determined to bring us together. And I hope that I'll see some of you at The Gap, Rockhampton in October. Looking forward to sharing three amazing days of learning and growth with passionate animal people, human animals, at that great event.
Yeah, cool. And just for the Australian listeners out there or people in the Australasian region or further afield, we weren't going to talk about this, but I think you've highlighted an opportunity that some people might not be aware of. Do you want to just quickly elaborate on The Gap and what that's about?
Well, The Gap is basically this year's training and conditioning workshop, a concept that was founded by some Kiwi animal trainers some years ago. And Rockhampton Zoo were generous enough to say that they're prepared to take it on, and they've rather beautifully named it The Gap, which means giving animals purpose. And what's great about that is it's positive, it's got a real sense of vision, but it's also really debatable when we talk about what is purpose for animals. Don't they already have their own purpose? How do we actually give them meaningful purpose in the lives that they often have to share with us? So it's going to be at Rockhampton, and it's going to feature like 3 days of amazing interactions with some incredible guest speakers from, I think it's the 22nd of October through to the 26th. And I'm really looking forward to going there and seeing many of my buddies and making some new friends and continuing to expand and grow my horizons in this area.
There you go. So if you are in the Australasian region and you are heading to GAP, you'll get the honour of meeting Mr. Nicholas Bishop at GAP 2000.
I'll get the honour of meeting you.
And that will go straight back at you as well. Hey, yep. I hope you all enjoyed that as much as we enjoyed making it. So many great takeaways from the episode today. I'm just so excited to get this out there and have you all benefit from Nick's great experience and insights. Lots of really great stuff coming up in the next few episodes as well. Something I'm really excited about is a two-part series on enrichment that we have coming up, relevant for zookeepers, pet owners, and vets, and everyone that looks after animals. So I can't wait for that one, as well as some of the world's leading experts on positive reinforcement animal training. We have some big names coming on the show, and we're just working through people's busy schedules to make those episodes happen. So stay tuned. One really cool area of Animal Training Academy that is developing rapidly is the Animal Training Academy forums. There's some really cool stuff going on in there, and we are starting to get some great case studies of various behaviors being trained with various species. I'm in there every day, and it's a great way to connect with other Animal Training Academy members and ask your personal questions about your individual training projects. One of the best ways to get access to the forums and learn more is by attending one of the live web classes. These are a lot of fun, and in the live web classes, we cover the 6 essential ingredients to effective behavior management of your animals. We cover a simple 3-step process for success that anyone can implement and helps develop your skills fast. And we showcase proven results using a method that is unique to Animal Training Academy. So if you want to learn more about this, then head over to animaltrainingacademy.com and hit the webinar button in the main menu. And this will give you information about when the next event is. Just click on the link and then check the dates and times. And there's a tool there to convert into your own time zone as well. So it's really simple. Just select where you live and it will tell you the exact time in your location. And I'll see you live in the event. I also stay in those web classes for as long as need be to make sure I answer everyone's questions and dive into your personal training challenges one-on-one. For now, though, that's it from this episode. Thank you so much for tuning in. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you with us today. If you liked the episode, or if you didn't like the episode, please leave a comment on animaltrainingacademy.com or iTunes, or tell us, or wherever you're listening to us. To wherever you are listening to this, tell us what you want to learn about. Tell us if there's anyone you want me to get on the show, what your favorite thing is about positive reinforcement animal training, anything at all. I would just love to hear from you guys. And thanks everyone for the comments you've been giving me on previous episodes as well. I take them all on board and into consideration when moving forward with the show. We'll be back in your eardrum shortly. For now, though, I'll say farewell.